Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Lakers Collective. He's Jovan Buha, Jason Timpf. I'm Trevor Lane. Today, we're talking LeBron James and Austin Reeves, giving them grades for the season, the playoffs, and we'll be taking your questions and comments as well. Before we dive into everything, do us a quick favor. Check real quick. See if you are subscribed to the Lakers Collective on YouTube or on the podcast feed, wherever you're watching or listening. If you're not, hit that subscribe button. Keep us going and keep us growing here on the Lakers Collective show. Guys, how you doing?
It's good to see you guys. We're discussing Austin and LeBron today. I'm sure it's going to be super cordial in the chat. I'm sure everyone's going to be very reasonable and kind to one another. No expletives or demeaning of anybody's character or their basketball ability. It's just going to be a very G-rated day here on Lakers Collective. I can feel it.
Been looking forward to this one.
This will be fun. Do you guys have a preference? Who do you guys want to start with?
Let's just rip the bandit off. Let's go Austin.
Okay. We could go Austin.
Okay. Let's rip the bandaid off here. We'll start with Austin Reeves grading his season. Now, Austin, on the season, once again, had a pretty good year in terms of, once again, increasing his numbers year in, year out. Games played, maybe a little bit of a concern there. 51 games played in the regular season, but 23 points, 4.7 boards, 5.5 assists, 1.1 steals, stepped into a bigger role than we've ever seen him in. 49% for the field, 36% from three, is going to be one of the top free agents available on the market. Jason, let's go to you first. What were your thoughts on Austin Reeves, the season that he had, and then if you want to give us a letter grade on him?
So I'm going to go with a B for Austin, and it really just comes down to availability. I want to say something similar to what I said about Luka on Tuesday, which is that the ceiling that Austin demonstrated this year is something that should excite all Lakers fans. There's been a clear, like every year, the ceiling for Austin has skyrocketed from last year, the handful of big games, like the game against Indiana, where he came in and won the game without Luka and LeBron. He had a couple of moments like that last year, but this year those moments just happened a lot more frequently and reached even higher ceilings, including the 50 piece from early in the year. I think that when you're talking about the potential partnership of Luka and Austin together, I think that has shown more promise, at least offensively, than any previous season, and that should be really exciting for all Laker fans. But then you dig into the reality, like just like with Luka, everything that happened in March was great, and then he couldn't play, and it ended up affecting the end of their season, right? And that's what brought Luka's grade down. Similarly for Austin, this was the year where his body just really broke down consistently and against the NBA schedule, and I think that, you know, one of the things that we don't talk about enough when it comes to the bigger responsibility roles in the NBA, like high volume ball handlers, defensive anchors, like something similar with Anthony Davis, like over the years. Like I always thought when Anthony Davis was healthy, he was the best defender in the world, but he just was very frequently either not available at all, or he'd be on the floor, but be kind of like an out of shape, kind of like bulkier version of himself that kind of struggled to impact the game at that peak level. And that's kind of the thing where it's like, okay, well, that's why people are going to talk about Gobert and other players in the league that they just viewed as more consistently impactful because of how often they were on the court and what they did when they were out there. Same thing goes for Austin. Like that's part of the deal. Part of the deal that comes with being the number two on a championship team, a legitimate high volume ball handler in this league, is you got to be out there for more than 65 games. And you've got to be able to be in rhythm for the majority of that. And so that's really the next phase for Austin. I don't really doubt him as a problem solver, even against the best defenses in the league. He's continued to show growth there. I thought he showed some real growth at the tail end of the OKC series. And I think he'll continue to kind of solve that problem, so to speak. But he has got to, quite simply, take care of his body at another level than where he was at and prepare his body for this grind. Because, frankly, this team is going to need him to play 65 plus games and be one of the more reliable night to night ball handlers in the league. So exciting ceiling, a lot of potential there for the Lakers long term, but he played what, 51 games this year and missed most of a playoff series. And, you know, and I've said this, the last thing I'll say, like I respected the hell out of Austin coming back in a contract year with nothing to gain. Like walking into that buzzsaw of OKC with no rhythm, no conditioning, no nothing. And we're literally, he had nothing to gain. He was just going to get criticized for playing poorly. It wasn't going to help his contract number this summer. If anything, it was only going to hurt it. Like, but he just did it for his team, and he did it to not leave his teammates hanging. And I think it speaks very highly of his basketball character and just who he is as a man. And I think he'd be a great partner for Luka, at least for the next couple of years as you continue to kind of explore that partnership. And all that's great for his ceiling, but bottom line, you can't really give him much higher than a B when you look at the availability issues he had this year.
Certainly something that's going to be worth watching moving forward. When we talk about his need to get stronger, he's going to have to get more durable if he's going to step into a bigger role. This has been his most injury-prone season of his career, and probably not a coincidence that it came in his highest usage season of his career when he was asked to do more. But that said, 98th percentile relative to his position at the rim, incredible finisher around the basket, very, very crafty, has the ability to get into the paint, one of the better pick and roll players in the NBA. Of course, we know his ability to use angles and maybe an occasional flop or two in order to get his way to the free throw line. He can be a force on the offensive side of the ball. Jovan, where do you land on Austin Reeves? And we ultimately will need to address the defensive side as well here.
Yeah, Jason said you can't give him higher than a B, but I am going to give him higher than a B. For me, I'm going to give him an A minus. And I said this last episode with the Luka conversation. Like, I guess maybe I'm a lenient grader here, but I'm not going to take away anything from Luka, LeBron, or Austin in terms of their availability and taking it. Like, I'm grading it more just like raw on court performance. And so for me, I thought, putting the injury stuff to the side, which I think it's fair to factor in, and I understand, like, I'm just curious, Jason, what would be your grade if you were putting the games aside, just like when he was on the floor, what would you give him?
I think you have to go like a plus relative to his salary, a minus relative to his salary.
That's where I like on court performance, A minus. If you want to dock him for the missed games, I think a B is fine. But I looked this up because I did a grades episode on my show. Austin was the 130th highest paid player in the NBA this season, and he easily gave you top 50 value. So just on the contract alone, I think getting the level of production that the Lakers got from him as being a legitimate number two at times this season and also a legitimate number three at times this season, like getting top three player production from a guy making $14 million on a team that made the second round and won 53 games. Like, that to me is an A++. Now, if you want to factor in the durability, obviously that knocks it down. For me, it's more so I factor it in the sense that to me, there's still this open-ended question with Austin of, can he play 70 plus games and maintain a certain usage and a certain workload and still have his legs? Because where I do dock him is 29% shooting on threes the last three postseasons. And that has been a trend where it has felt like he's barely getting to the finish line at the end of these seasons. And I don't know if that's reducing his minutes, reducing his workload, or that's just going to be a thing that he has to find a way to overcome and deal with at the end of these seasons. But that would be the biggest thing for me, is like, I just don't think the jumper has been able to sustain. We can't talk about the defense. We could talk about the turnovers. I think those are the three big things with him right now. But for me, my biggest knock on him has been the jumper and it just not being where it needs to be at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think that all speaks to, when we talk about they're connected, right? The availability, we talk about the legs being gone at the end of the season. And of course, he was coming back from an injury. So how much do we factor that into what he looked like in the playoffs? Some games he looked great, some games he didn't in the postseason. I'm sure we'll have more of a conversation on that. But it all comes down to, can he be the second guy? Because that's obviously going to be a big factor in what he's going to get on his next contract, which a lot of people are very, very interested in. But also, can he be at his best if he is going to be the second guy for the large chunk of the season, because availability is now a bigger factor in how much a guy gets paid, in which we're living in an NBA world where, based on this current CBA, every player has to produce at their contract level, if not above, frankly. And Austin has done that for years now, produced above, but he's been underpaid. That's about to change. So at that point, are you able to comfortably say Austin is the number two guy and he's going to be available enough to be worth that? And I think that's the question that we're still going to be trying to answer with him as we go into next season. I do think he's going to be a Laker next season. I don't think they let him go. I think he wants to stay in LA, and I think they're going to continue on down that path. In terms of the defensive, because this is the thing that everybody points to, right? Not just the availability, but it's the defensive concerns as well. I feel like while I don't want to go as far as to say like he's a good defensive player, I do think the defensive concerns are a little bit overblown, and that when he does have a bad showing defensively, it's in a very loud way when he gets beat. And so it causes people to consider him to be a worse defender than he actually is. Again, don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not saying he's a good defender. I'm not saying he's the complete turnstile that people make him out to be. In fact, the Lakers gave up 4.5 points per 100 possessions less when Austin Reeves was on the floor. And you say, oh, well, he was playing minutes without Luka then or something like that. No, Luka and Austin actually on the floor together for the Lakers this season ranked in the 82nd percentile defensively. Jason, where are you at on Austin as a defender? Because I know that's not a strength of his game, but there's also a argument for, is that enough to hold him back from being the type of player that the Lakers ultimately need?
So I think that when you start to have this conversation, there are some realities. So, like, you need a secondary ball handler next to Luka. That's been proven. And I'd even take a step further and say, like, every team needs a secondary ball handler. I mean, like, the OKC thing is kind of like fake because they just have so many good players that guys that can kind of slot up it. But I mean, even in game four in San Antonio, you saw what it looks like when you don't have another guy who can put the ball on the floor, and they very well may end up getting them beat in the series. It's certainly a possibility. But in that context, how many guys in the league are like legitimately good enough to be the secondary ball handler off of Luka Doncic, but are like also plus defenders? There's just not that many of them. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd argue, like that's what's so unique about a guy like J-Dub, for example, in OKC. But he's a very rare example of that type of player. And that, you know, and J-Dub has had his offensive limitations over the years. But like the point is, and J-Dub, by the way, is one of the top, you know, 20 players in the league when he's fully healthy, right? He's somewhere in there. He had 40 points in a finals game last year. So I think there's some reality to whether or not you, if you decide to have a secondary ball handler next to Luka, that guy is almost certainly going to be a average to below average defensive player. Even just looking at previous Luka builds, Kyrie Irving wasn't a plus defender. He was a guy that did his job, but that could get physically overwhelmed. You know who that is? That's Austin Reeves. Austin Reeves does his job, but can get physically overwhelmed. Jalen Brunson wasn't a great defender when he was playing in Dallas alongside Luka Doncic. Like, there's a certain amount of this that's like, this is kind of just what it's going to look like building around Luka. I would argue over the years, the biggest problem has been you've been bad at the other three positions defensively. You've had LeBron, who didn't really play hard on defense until late February. DeAndre Ayton, who, let's not even get into it. We'll talk Ayton next week.
Yeah.
But, and then you have Marcus Smart, who is good. But like, I would argue he is not like your typical like starting caliber, you know, Jaden McDaniels-esque 3-and-D wing who can like really anchor a defense on the perimeter. So I think for all the conversation about Austin's defensive limitations, just start to kind of work that out mentally. Like, okay, we talked about it on Tuesday. What about Donovan Mitchell? Do you think Donovan Mitchell is a better athlete than Austin, but he also gets physically overwhelmed and was repeatedly attacked by like Cade Cunningham and different types of players throughout this postseason. And is legitimately an awful off-ball defender who constantly gets lost and constantly makes mistakes, which to Austin's credit, he is not perfect in that area, but he is way more like game plan attentive as an off-ball defender. He can get physically overwhelmed, but so can just about every other guard. Start to work your way through that list. Like, let's pretend it's LaMelo Ball instead of Austin, like, you know, a super high-level secondary ball handler. That dude's going to get picked on and is a major defensive liability. You can go down the list. It's just hard to find. Like, how many J-Dubs or Jaylen Browns are there in the NBA? You count them on one hand. So it's there's just some reality to, like, if you're having the conversation. Jovan said this last Tuesday, which I think is really smart. Like, if you're sending out Austin, you got to get back another ball handler.
Sure.
Who's that guy? Like, Drew Holiday's too old now. Like, there's not a Drew Holiday waiting around. So, like, who's
I've been looking at this list of guys averaging 5+ assists and, like, who are actually positive defenders here. And it's like, I mean, there's Amen Thompson and Derek White and Dyson Daniels and Davion Mitchell. And otherwise, it's a lot of guys who are bad defensively or number one options who you're not going to be slotting as a number two. So it's a pretty short list to your larger point of just like guys who can play make ball handle at a certain level and be above average defensively.
And I like Derek White. I don't think Derek White's a good enough ball handler to be the number two off of Luka especially in his mid 30s, you know? So like, I think the conversation around Austin is fair about how he is an athletically limited defender, but frankly, whoever the number two is alongside Luka will most likely be either a athletic but bad defender just because he's not good at the details, or an unathletic, physically overwhelmed defender from time to time. And the one thing that I like about Austin is he's got decent size because he's not like 6 foot. He's like 6'4". And he does scrap. Like, he's scrappy. He like will help crack down rebound in big moments. There are a lot of games that the Lakers won this year where Austin got big defensive rebounds. Mm-hmm. And just in general, he does his job. And so, like, I think people get a little bit unrealistic about what they expect from that number two spot.
I think one of the things that's interesting too is if you are of the side, when you look at what Austin did in the playoffs, if you are of the mindset already that he's not the second guy, you've got evidence you can point to in the playoffs. If you're of the mindset that he could be that second guy, you've got evidence that you could point to in the play. Like, he didn't change anybody's mind in either direction, because the games where he shot particularly well and he dropped, you know, 27 points, he also would have a high number of turnovers. But then the counter would be, well, he did it against OKC, though, which is perhaps the most difficult, or not even perhaps, is the most difficult perimeter defense to deal with, particularly when it comes to forcing turnovers. And in an ideal world, he's got Luka on the floor and he's not having to initiate all on his own. So I think it's an interesting situation the Lakers are in. I also find it very fascinating to see how the dynamic shifts when we're talking about players for other teams. So, for example, I can tell you how many Lakers fans that I've heard this year that have said, you know, you need to sign and trade Austin. You need to move him off this team. Is there any way we can get Jalen Duren? And all I can think is, oh my God, like, if Jalen Duren was a Laker and he did what he did in the playoffs, Lakers fans would be trying to trade him right now, be trying to get him off the team. You can't pay him in free. Like, he was awful in the playoffs. So there is that kind of dynamic where we can sometimes get very down on our own players, and the grass is greener on the other side, which isn't always the case. Because you're right, there's going to be a drawback no matter who it is that's going to be that second player. I didn't give my grade. I ultimately landed right at a B+ for Austin, because I do take a little bit of a score off for games missed. That said, you factor in the salary, the production that you got in terms of bang for your buck, I feel pretty comfortable right there at the B+. I don't think he definitively settled the can he be the second guy conversation over the course of the season. There were moments early on where it looked like, oh, okay, he's definitely a second guy, right? The numbers that he was putting up in October, November, that didn't last for the entire season. And so I ultimately landed B+. He wasn't able to cement the, yes, I'm that dude all the time argument. So I'll go B+ with him. Jovan, do you have any final thoughts before we, you know, move on to LeBron James?
Yeah, looking this up here, so over the past 2 years, And this is, I'm just double checking. This is regular season. So we have a very small sample size with Luka and Austin in the playoffs. It's just last postseason against Minnesota. But in 1,613 regular season minutes, with Austin and Luka on the floor, and this is not factoring in LeBron. So some of these minutes do include LeBron on the floor. Some of it is with him off. A 122 offensive rating and a 113 defensive rating. So that is an above average defense and best in the league, actually best of all time offensive rating, which, you know, extrapolating that out, whatever. But point being is, like, I think we have a sample of, to Jason's earlier point, like with these two guys on the floor together, the Lakers have been really, really good. I think we saw that at the beginning of the season when LA started 15-4. I think we saw that during that March stretch. Like, I think there is something here with Luka and Austin. Now, it remains to be seen what they look like in a playoff series together, because we just haven't really seen it. We saw the one Minnesota series. I think Austin was a much better player this year than he was last year. I think Luka was a much better player this year than he was last year, coming off of the calf injury and just being traded and all that stuff. So it remains to be seen. I'm at the point with Austin where I think he's more of a number three than a number two. And ideally that number two is a front court player. So my optimal build would be, I mean, the short term, that could be LeBron, but like longer term, it's Luka, a front court all-star, all-NBA player, and then Austin as the third guy. I think that is the optimal way to build this infrastructure moving forward. Quickly, before we move to LeBron, did you guys see the report today from ESPN about Austin and his next contract?
Yes, no. I did. They talked about the Brooklyn Nets being a team that is potentially after him in free agency. And I don't recall if it was an exec or a scout, but one or the other.
It was an East scout.
An East scout said they'd be surprised if Austin's next contract started with a 3 and not a 4, meaning they're expecting his next contract to start $40 million or above. The most he can get on the first year is 41.5 roughly. So that was that report. Was there anything that I was forgetting there, Jovan?
Well, so Bontem said he spoke to multiple people who all ballparked Austin's next contract at around 5 years, $200 million, which is what have been throwing out. And that would be a $40 million AAV. I think people are entirely underestimating what Austin's contract is going to look like. And the people that continue to throw out like 25 or even $30 million, like, it's just not going to look like that. It's going to be, I think, at a minimum 35, and if not closer to 40 plus. So whether that's with the Lakers or another team, I still think it's going to be with the Lakers. But if the Lakers try to get that down into that 30-35 range, he will get a higher AAV from someone else.
I will say, as long as if they do operate as a below the cap team, the one of the big things I want to see on his next contract is that declining contract. Doesn't do anything to hurt the player as long as the total dollar amount is the same. And I think would be a really smart way to try to insulate that contract in terms of positive or negative value into the future. That's, again, if you were an above the cap team and they decide to run people, that's a totally different conversation. If they operate as a below the cap team where they're using Austin's cap hold, that $21 million on their books, and it's not going to change what their spending power is, that's where I want to see that contract drop down. So if it is going to start high like that at $40 million and up, I want to see that drop down and have that be a reflection of, as you're saying, he's going to be maybe a third guy. I think you have to be very, very careful under this collective bargaining agreement about paying the third guy, second guy money. That's where teams get themselves in trouble. We've seen it historically. It's part of why did Brandon Ingram get traded? Because the Pelicans didn't like him anymore, didn't think he was a good player. No, they didn't want to pay the kind of money that he was going to get. Under this CBA, you've got to be very careful with how much money you give guys. Otherwise, you can very quickly flip a contract into being a negative value. So I just think the Lakers have to, you can't lose him, but you also have to walk that very fine line and try to make sure that you give yourself as much margin for error as possible so you don't accidentally wind up with a negative value contract.
And if you lose him, remember, you're only gaining $21 million in cap space. Correct. So that's not, you're not replacing Austin Reeves at $21 million.
The one thing that I wanted to add as it pertains to the defense conversation, I think in the context of how Austin stacks up against other ball handlers as a defender, which I think he does reasonably well. I think the real question is just whether or not he's good enough offensively. I think that's really the, like, if you're having some sort of question as to whether or not he's the right guy next to Luka, I think it really just comes down to how good he is offensively. Like frankly, like, look at Kyrie in 2024 mm-hmm. or Jalen Brunson in 2022. That really is the standard there. And I don't think Austin's the same type of player as Kyrie. He's a better passer. He's more of a pick and roll like engine more than he is like a isolation scorer the way that Kyrie Irving is. But like, it's just a question of like, Austin does have some growth to get to that type of like legitimate number two option. I think it's more going to have to do with whether or not he can reach the level he needs to reach offensively.
Yeah. It's a fair point. I think that part of the reason why there's so much focus again on Austin's defense is because that's the loudest part especially when he has to be low man. And the Thunder did a great job putting him in situations where he had to be. They also put Luke Kennard in those situations. Or he has to defend in space against a player that's faster than him. He really, really struggles. I thought he made some nice adjustments in the Rockets series where even when Amen Thompson was able to get a step on him, he did a really nice job anticipating and then slapping the ball away on the gather. Did a great job there. But there were moments. I mean, A.J. Mitchell was able to burn him in the OKC series. I see why those moments do stand out, and they can be frustrating, and they're moments that will obviously reflect the way a lot of people are going to see him and see his ultimate value to the team. But can he be that partner long-term for Luka? I think the biggest thing, guys, that we haven't touched upon in order to kind of put a bow on all of this is Luka wants Austin on the team, right? That is probably the big elephant in the room here is what I think, what the fans think, what you guys think. The most important person is, what does Luka think? And Luka seems to want Austin around and want him on the team and thinks they are a good pairing and wants to continue moving forward with this.
We also have Rob Pelinka's comments at exit interviews. Yeah. Like I mentioned this after we did our exit interview show, but he was glowing speaking about Austin Reeves and the mutual interest there and how Austin wants to be a Laker. The Lakers want him to be a Laker. So again, I think this is going to be a situation that they work out, but I think people are going, there's going to be some sticker shock, in my opinion, with the next contract he signs. And I think a lot of the people who, I mean, I'm seeing it in the chat, like $15 million, $20 million, like Austin is going to be making more than double that.
I believe in Austin. I think Austin's going to have a lot of big moments as a Laker.
I'm sure no one will overreact at all. When the contract comes up, everyone will be very reasonable with that. All right. Let's talk a little bit about LeBron James. LeBron, age 41 season. I mean, I just keep being amazed because he continues to do LeBron James things. Was he the same as he was at 35? Say no, but LeBron still does LeBron things out there on the floor. He is an absolute maestro offensively, can do whatever you need him to on the basketball floor. There were, you know, some injury concerns in the early going, didn't start the season with the team, had to deal with that sciatica issue. The shooting did dip this year, but ultimately the team was simply better. I mean, shocker, right? Better when LeBron James was on the floor. We started with Jason last time. Johan, we'll start with you. How do you grade LeBron James for the season?
I'm going with an A minus. I think LeBron had a great season. I mean, if we're judging his age, right, and how deep he is into his career, that's an A plus plus plus, a million pluses. But I think all things considered, I'm giving him an A minus. Once again, I'm not knocking the games missed. He had the sciatica stuff to start the season and then missed a few games here and there throughout. But 21-6-7. He also, his ability to scale into different roles and positions. We had several dialogues about his, what number two versus number three and Austin and the context with all that. But you look at the way that he started the season more in that number three role for about like a month or so. Then Austin goes down in December. Then he scales up to the number two, is in that role for nearly a couple months until Austin is back. then Austin comes back and they're sort of like almost flip-flopping a bit there. For the time being, Austin's coming off the bench and he's not playing as well. LeBron is still more of that number two. Then at the end of February, they like JJ has the comment where he comes out and says that Austin should be the number two guy in usage. LeBron should be the number three. And he also had a meeting with the three, and that led to a shift where we saw that 16-2 stretch. LeBron had a 22% usage percentage, his lowest of the season, and it would be by far the lowest of his career in that March as the Lakers had that dominant run. And then at the end of all that, Luka and Austin both go down, and now he has to go from not only taking a step back as like the number three to taking a giant step forward, leading this group into a playoff run and helping them win a playoff series. So I think one of the special things with LeBron, like to me, he's the most versatile player of all time. He can play any position. He could do just about anything at a solid level at a minimum on a basketball court. So we've just never seen anything like this. And the fact that he's still doing this at 41 year 23, about to be year 24, like it's just absolutely absurd. If I wanted to nitpick a couple things, I think the jumper was clearly not there in a way that it had been the last couple of years. Last 2 years, he was a 40%+ catch and shoot guy on threes. This year, he was in the low 30s. So I think that did affect his off-ball utility to a degree where you saw teams start to play off of him a little bit more and play him more for the jumper, which had been the MO on him for most of his career, or at least like the first half. But that had changed dramatically the last like 10 to 12 years or so, and not as much this season. And then the handle was not as tight. I think there was some just uncharacteristic dribbling the ball off of his foot, you know, mishandling on drives. He wasn't able to beat guys off the dribble as consistently. I think you saw that at times in the playoffs as well. So I think the two biggest areas of slippage, in my opinion, were the 3-point shot and the handle. But part of that, I think, is just a battle with Father Time. And like he's still winning that battle pretty decisively, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree with everything you said there. I'll tell you guys before I throw it here to Jason. The thing that surprised me the most about LeBron this season was this. LeBron James on the court, Austin Reeves and Luka Doncic off, plus 11.3 in over 1,000 possessions. I did not think that at age 41, I thought that LeBron was going to be of the three. LeBron was going to be the one of the three that needed one of the other two on the floor. And they found something with the LeBron and the Banshees units. LeBron was one of the top players in the NBA in fast break points scored. He was able to get out in transition and run. That, to me, was something that I think helped mitigate that defense or that three-point drop that we saw percentage-wise with the jumper, was his ability to get out in transition and be just that absolute freight train that we've known, be able to get out there and score buckets off of defensive stops. He was absolutely fantastic there. And the fact that you were able to win games, be winning possessions without Luka, without Austin on the floor with LeBron James at 41, absolutely remarkable. I wouldn't have predicted that they would have had to play so many minutes without Luka or Austin with LeBron by himself, or that even at age 41, he would still be that impactful when he's on the floor on his own. All right, Jason, give us your thoughts on LeBron.
They had a 120 offensive rating in those lineups. How crazy is that? So I'm going to give LeBron an A-, and I want to be clear. One of the big reasons why I'm giving LeBron a slightly better grade than both Luka and Austin just stems from the simple fact that he was able to go during the postseason. At the end of the day, the reason why we play these games are to pursue the trophy, and the games that matter the most are the games that are played in late April and in May and in June. And I like LeBron's ability to play, especially after considering how many games he missed to start the season. He was just simply the Lakers' most available player, other than Jake LaRavia, basically, after he joined the team with the sciatica issue that he had that caused him to miss camp. I think if you divided the season into two parts, the post-All-Star break part and the pre-All-Star break part, I think you get two very different grades. Like, I'd give LeBron probably like a C if you go pre-All-Star break, and then I'd give him like an A+ for post-All-Star break, because pre-All-Star break, it was frustrating. He missed a big chunk of the season to start. When he joined the team, he looked bad for a while. His jump shot was off all year long. I thought he was a big part of their defensive issues for stretches. When he was vaulted into a ball handling role, I thought he was, you know, good at it at times, inconsistent. It like was just a very uneven season for that first kind of like two thirds of it up until the All-Star break. Post All-Star break, it was like literally one of my favorite stretches of LeBron's career. Between him seamlessly just slotting into that tertiary role and just the amazing job he did doing it as like an evolutionary Draymond Green, to the leadership that he showed after the injuries in re-galvanizing the group around him as the primary ball handler, to winning a playoff series as literally the 13th largest underdog in the history of tracking that sort of thing. Like, that's an incredibly impressive endeavor. Like, to put it very simply, LeBron took over the team on April 2nd because of the injuries. And he gave him 5 weeks. Luka wasn't able to come back in 5 weeks because the hamstring strain ended up being too severe. But he carried the team 5 weeks further into the future, which is really all you can ask in terms of giving the team an opportunity to get its stars back. I think, like, literally that stretch post and game six against Houston was one of my favorite playoff games I can remember him playing, just as an old man rolling up a 3-2 series and just snatching a team's heart with how he played in the first half of that game. Like, it was one of my favorite stretches of LeBron's career. And just by virtue of being the guy who was leading the team on offense and on defense over the course of that final 6 weeks of the season, I just think he deserves a boatload of credit. Again, it's that stretch from the pre-All-Star break is going to drag him down to an A-minus for me. But I just thought LeBron, you know, just one of those moments that I think helps kind of contextualize just who he is as a player and how we can sometimes forget why he's arguably the greatest basketball player to ever play the game.
I'm also going to go A minus. The drop in 3-point percentage I thought did hurt in the half court quite a bit. Hopefully that does, because we've talked about it here on the show before. He has these seasons where he'll be off from three, then he gets it dialed in the next year. So hopefully we do see a bounce back next year if he's back, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. But I think aside from the production on the floor, the stats, everything that he produced, you know, guiding the team into the playoffs, all that kind of stuff. I've said it a bunch. LeBron did not get enough credit last year for this guy that there's a lot of LeBron haters out there. There's a lot of LeBron stans as well. But for this guy that the general public has this perception that he's this insane egomaniac, right? That everything has to be his way and he has to control everything. The Lakers traded for Luka Doncic, and he immediately shifted his defensive role. He essentially took over Anthony Davis's defensive responsibilities last year, right? And I don't think he got enough credit for shifting the way he was in his defensive role on the team last year. And then you look at this year. Talk about an uncomfortable situation. He has been, for his entire life, the most important player on every team he's ever played for. Ever, right? Now you're going into a season where that's no longer the case. You know the team is not being built around you, and you understand why, if you're LeBron James, why the team is now being built around Luka. You step into that situation late. The team is already off and running. You're dealing with an injury. All you can do is sit on the side and watch. You're already in an uncomfortable and unfamiliar situation. And to in that environment, if you're LeBron James and you are arguably the greatest of all time, I don't particularly care to have that argument, but he's in the conversation to say, okay, I'll be the third guy in terms of usage, because that's going to be what's best for the team. Like, if anybody has the right to say, no, I'm LeBron James, I am not the third guy for anybody, right? It would be him. And he said, no, I'll do it. And not only do it, but do it well. And then up, the other guys get hurt. No problem. Let me put my cape back on, and I'm going to go ahead and take us all the way through into the playoffs here, and I'm going to play great. I think he's got to get, from the mental side of things, you've got to give him a lot of credit for the way he has approached the last year and a half with this team. That inevitably leads us to this, though. The last year and a half with this team, I love what he's done. I love the mental approach to the game. He's ventured into uncharted waters, and he's done so very, very successfully. Was that the end, though, of LeBron with the Lakers? Jovan, where are you at for LeBron's future, and is it in L.A.?
I still think that the most likely outcome is him being in LA, but we continue to get reports about Like there was a recent report from Brian Windhorst stating that if LeBron is going to take a dollar less than the max, that the Lakers have to sell him on that and present a reason for we're going to sign player X or do move Y. And it's not just, oh, well, you know, we expect you to take less than you made this past season. So if that is, and you know, there's a lot of noise always around LeBron, and there's a lot of noise going into this offseason, just like there is pretty much every offseason. So I mean, if we take that at face value, I think that's going to set up an interesting negotiation between the two sides. If there is some leeway there and it's not as cut and dry, black and white as max or like sell me on submax, then I think that there will be some common ground that the two sides can figure out. But I mean, I would be stunned if he is back with the Lakers on a max contract. I think it's probably going to be something in the $20 to $25 million range if he is back. Maybe the Lakers go upwards of 30. I think you can go more if you're operating above the cap, which is sure. An entirely different conversation that we don't need to get into. But if, I mean, there's just a simple input output here where every dollar that LeBron is making more, if the Lakers are operating as a cap space team, it is more difficult to add to the roster. And not only that, you might lose the roster. And we, you know, we just had a breakdown on this on my channel yesterday, Trevor. Like, if LeBron's you could pay LeBron $40 million, but if you have $49 million in cap space, you now have $9 million and a $9 million room exception to somehow try to keep Rui and Marcus and add to the roster, which is just impossible with that limited financial means. So he, if he is back in LA, it's going to have to be at a lower number. Now what that number is, I don't know. I think 20 to 25 is more than anyone else can pay him. None of the teams that are going to be his suitors have cap space, but certainly again, if it's that simple of just like max or bust, then he could have played his last game as a Laker. But for now, I think with the available information we have, I'm still leaning toward him being back. It's just going to be a lower number that the Lakers then try to add to the roster with the remaining cap space.
Jason, what do you want to see LeBron do? Where would you ideally like to see him? How would you want to see him finish his career?
I want to see him stay in LA. I think there are some realities to just like with Steph or with KD or with any of the great players that I grew up rooting for, I want to see them play meaningful basketball. And so like, I don't really love the idea of the Lakers just basically running it back with the same roster when they're not anywhere close. And if LeBron decided to look elsewhere because someone else had just a better pitch, I would respect that decision. I think that, and we talked a little bit about this on Tuesday, when you factor in all the factors between just his age and how established he is in LA with his family, the fact that the Eastern Conference is getting stronger. And so while there's an advantage avoiding San Antonio and OKC, meaning not having to beat both, there are a lot of other tough challenges that await in that Eastern Conference. Some of the realities about the best player, like I really, you know, I just don't think Donovan Mitchell's in the same stratosphere. It may be several stratospheres between him and a guy like Luka Doncic when he's healthy and at his best. And frankly, like there's a certain amount of this, like as a basketball fan, like the continuity, like LeBron and Austin and Luka now has kind of joined this group. They're just kind of like a staple of the NBA at this point. And I just want to see the three of them keep playing basketball together. So as a fan, I'm definitely rooting for that. Jovan laid out all the logistics. We don't need to dig any further into it there. I do think that LeBron and his willingness to take less will completely be dependent on what you're pitching him as the alternative. And I think like I think if he thought that enough good players were coming in, he would take a shockingly low number. I just don't think it would happen unless he believed that there was some sort of true incentive, some sort of true payoff to that idea. And that's on Rob. It's going to be on Rob to kind of to balance that out.
Agreed. And from a Lakers side of things, looking at what's out there in free agency, unless there are some, you know, some trade options or things like that that we're not, you know, privy to at this moment, I have a hard time seeing how the team gets better losing LeBron James. Now, I also have a hard time seeing how the team gets better if LeBron, as Jovan laid out, gets a max salary. So it's going to be Rob Pelinka is going to prove his worth this summer. One way or another, this is a very, very difficult situation to manage, and we're going to find out if the Lakers can do so successfully. It's going to be a big, big summer as far as that goes. LeBron James, still phenomenal. Obviously, I would love to see him finish his career with the Lakers. I want him to play his last game in a Lakers jersey. But how that all plays out this summer is going to be one of the biggest storylines, and it's part of why the Lakers are the most fascinating team in the NBA to watch this summer, no question, because there are so many different things that are up in the air with them. All right, we are going to get to the chat questions and comments in just a moment. First, quick shout out here to our sponsor, and that is Prize Picks. If the right screen share is here. But it wasn't.
You can do this, Trevor. Yeah. I believe in you, dude.
It was. It's the wrong one that's on here. Yep. It's definitely not here. Okay. Well, we're just going to have to move ahead here then. Oh, wait. There we go.
Nope, I feel like we keep getting one step closer.
We keep getting one step closer, and it's still just not working. It's supposed to just be one button, and it goes. But no go there. All right. Well, I will just say Prize Picks does a phenomenal job. You guys can check them out. Super, super easy to use. And use the link in the description down below. Their code is HMA. And you can check them out over on
there. Take Wemby's points tonight.
Take Wemby's points for sure.
He's got his honor is on the line after what happened in game five. So he's just going to have to go out there and score a bunch to make up for it.
All right, guys. Well, I work on getting us back into the right slots here. Gosh, the thing is came about. Let's go to our chat here. Give us your thoughts on Miles Turner. Once Milwaukee trades Giannis, they'll want to get off his contract. Center rotation of Turner, Robert Williams, and Hayes. Then go get Herb Jones. I guess let's just start with the Miles Turner of it all. Jovan, what do you think about trying to target Miles Turner?
I feel like we talked about this recently. I think I'm out on Turner, or I would need an asset to take him on, or at a minimum get off of Vando in the trade. So maybe that ends up being your way to get off of Vando, is you don't have to attach an asset and trade dump him. It's more you take on arguably a worse contract, because Miles Turner still has 3 years left in the mid to high 20s, and I don't think he'd be getting that much money based on the season he just had in Milwaukee. I thought he had a pretty disappointing season and regressed in several regards. I also think it's not the cleanest fit with Luka. I think a pick and pop big can fit with Luka, but the bread and butter with Luka is the pick and roll, is being a lob threat. And I think Turner, for example, is a worse lob threat than DeAndre Ayton, right? And DA was not, it was something he could do at a like solid level, but it was not like an intrinsic part of his game. He really it took them a bit to figure out that lob chemistry compared to a guy like Jackson, or even lower in this list like Robert Williams. So for Turner, I understand, and I know we have another question here about like going five out against OKC in San Antonio. I understand the appeal for that, but Luka has been at his best with that pick and roll big and lob threat, and I just don't think Turner is capable of doing that too. Like, I think Luka would get the best version of Miles Turner as a lob threat out of him. I just don't think that's like really a strength of his. So to me, it's just like not the best fit between him and Luka and him and Austin. And he's also not a good rebounder. And so I think of like all the bigs that we have, Nick Claxton, Jared Allen, Robert Williams, Kessler, Durin, all those guys are much better rebounders than Miles Turner. So it's like you need a four who can rebound at a really high level. And you also probably need like he would maybe fit with like a John Collins type, where that guy could be more of the lob threat, the primary screener. Turner's more of a spacer. But you need a very specific four and front court around him that I don't think the Lakers are going to put around him. So based on the years, the contract, and the skill set, I just don't really love the fit there.
I do think he's better than Ayton. And I think the Bucks defense was 7 points better per 100 possessions when he was on versus when he was off. They went from a 124 defensive rating when he was off down to a 117. 38% from three on 5.5 attempts is pretty solid from the five spot. Jovan makes a good point about the rebounding. I would add too that like he struggled in some specific coverages with Indiana. Like his at the level coverage, he loses contain of the ball handler pretty frequently. I do think he's a substantially better basketball player overall than Ayton. And so to me, the question would be, what are we giving? And like that's where like to Jovan's point about like getting an asset back. I wonder if you could structure a deal that involved sending out Vando's contract and no other draft compensation either way. And it was like, hey, we'll take your bad Miles contract, but you take our bad Vando contract. And, you know, obviously the Lakers are taking on more bad money there for a long time, but I do think Miles is a better player. And really, it's just about all the options. So, like, personally, would I rather have like a guy like Gobert? Yeah. Or, you know, like if, or if you could sign Mitchell Robinson at a discounted deal, sure. But like my thing is if the choice is between like Turner or Claxton, I kind of actually do lean more towards a guy like Turner because he's just more physically imposing. The 3-point shooting is there. And I think you could get him without giving up a draft pick.
Yeah. I think Turner was a great idea when the Lakers had Anthony Davis as a floor spacer to put on the floor with him. It's not easy to find guys who can shoot the three. And I think what's happening right now is you're seeing a lot of people that say, well, you know, you look at what's happening with, you know, OKC has a big that can shoot the three. You've got San Antonio obviously has a big that can shoot the three. But New York has a big that can shoot the three. Is that now a commonality that is a big benefit for a team to have success? And so you're going to have people that still lean into Miles Turner. As Senpai says here, you guys are looking at it all wrong. The best way to beat San Antonio and OKC is five out. We need to be looking at absorbing Miles Turner in a trade with cap space. I don't think he's positive value on that contract. I don't think he solves any of your rebounding. Like you would still need to have a bruiser archetype big to put in there to handle some of the glass and maybe even occasionally play with Miles Turner, because you are kind of at that deficit when it comes to rebounding the basketball with him on the floor. In the scenario you're talking about, though, where you're parting with Vando, that does do quite a bit to eat into how much money you're actually taking on. And if the Bucks were open to doing something like that, maybe that becomes a little more intriguing. But I still don't. He's not.
I think I'm more open to it in that case.
What's that?
So, I think I'm more open to it in that case. If you get off Vando, and if you're the Bucks, you're saving, it's half his salary, and he only has 2 years compared to 3 years for Turner. So. Yeah. There could be some incentive there for them.
He's not.
I keep thinking about the stopgap thing. Like, so obviously Hartenstein's a much better player, but like, there's a reason why the Thunder were like, hey, we'll pay Hartenstein 3 years, $100 million or whatever it was that they paid him. Cause it was like, we'll figure out what we're going to do in the long term. Now Isaiah has been so good that they might just extend him. But like, the point is like, I think sometimes like $25 million or whatever, $27 million, whatever Miles's number is, that's kind of like league average starting center money. I know it sounds crazy, but like if you're looking for something as like a stopgap solution that gives you a few years to find like a long-term solution, or you know how it goes, you get closer to the end of the contract, it gets easier to trade. I would never give up a draft pick for Miles, but like, yeah, if you could get off of Vando's money and basically all you're paying for Miles is just a larger chunk of your cap space, essentially, I think it makes more sense, especially with the team that like the Lakers desperately need like a legitimate defensive anchor at the center position. And that's not to say that Miles is some great defensive anchor, but he's substantially better than Jackson or DeAndre.
Yeah. I think we talked about it last show, but the Lakers ranked 29th in the NBA in opponent's field goal percentage at the rim. You've got to get rim protection in there.
The one thing I would quickly add, though, would be like the examples you mentioned, right? You mentioned New York, San Antonio, OKC all have stretch bigs. All those guys are much better rebounders than that's where for me it's like,
oh, by far.
I think there's a limitation to the pick and roll fit with Luka, which is already its own thing of like, is Luka even on board with like, I think Luka wants a true vertical lob threat, which does limit the pool to like certain types of bigs. But then if you're going to figure out a way to, it would be like, okay, like Turner, you're going to have to roll more. You're going to have to be more of a lob presence, and Luka will make it easy for you because of his ability to manipulate the defense and hit those late lobs. But then it's like, I just think if we think about what I would want from a center on this team would be like an elite vertical, you know, elite screener, elite lob threat, elite rebounder, elite defender. Now, it's going to be difficult to check all three of those. But to me, Turner doesn't even check two of the three. And that's where I just think there's a limitation with the fit there. But if it is between like Turner versus Ayton, I'm 100% with Jason. I would take Turner over Ayton, even with the salary difference. I just think some of the guys that we're discussing check or get close to checking all three boxes, whereas to me, Turner checks one of the three.
Yeah, that's a good way to sum it up there. Ja Blackman said, I hope Isaiah Evans from Duke drops to us in the draft. I'm hoping to dig more into the draft this weekend. I don't know if you guys have any thoughts on who you're hoping will drop to the Lakers.
Let's just plan on doing some draft centric shows after the finals.
That's
because I need more time to prep for it too.
I do too. I'm still, even with the decrease in the number of games, it's still tough to get into draft stuff just yet. Anti-tanking idea: draft order equals 50% standings, 50% analyst coaches power ranking by vote. Do you think this stops intentional tanking? So where you're actually at in the standings,
and sucks, is that
right?
The media is like, actually, these guys really need the number one pick. Let's just get it.
I don't know. I mean, I tend to think, even when it comes to stuff like all-star votes determining contracts and who's going to be eligible for a supermax and all that, I think we tie a little bit too much into the media vote on things. As far as analysts and coaches' power rankings and voting and trying to have that determine who gets the number one pick, I think there's a lot of room for shenanigans in that.
Yeah, I would. It would be entertaining.
Yeah, it would. It'd be entertaining.
You would suddenly get like Bill Simmons would be trashing the Celtics and stuff.
I
mean, right?
I would say this would be awful for the Lakers. If you look at Lakers awards voting and how most of the media views the Lakers, this would be terrible for the Lakers.
Why do you think that is?
I mean, we could have a whole hour discussion.
I know that's a much bigger conversation, but.
I mean, yeah, I'm trying to distill it into
I don't want you to get yourself
20
in
to 30 second take. I mean, it's just, they're the Lakers, right? Like, I don't know, they're born with a golden spoon in their mouth. So people don't want to, like, I mean, they're the only franchise that there's been like these league wide outrage after like the Powell trade and the Luka trade of how could this player have been traded to the Lakers. Sure. And if we had known this, we would have offered all this extra stuff. And like, I get some of the outrage, but you only have that when it comes to the Lakers. Like, teams can build super teams and like, people are upset, like Golden State or whatnot, but it's just different when it's the Lakers for a variety of reasons.
All right, let's go here. Question for each of you. Would you rather sign Austin Reaves or Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu? If we're taking Austin at his cap hold at $21 million, you're not getting Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu. It's not like you can swap those two things out. If assuming the Lakers are operating as a below the cap team, so that it's a little bit of a faulty premise there, just in terms of what it would mean for your spending power. But if you were to take contracts out, would you rather have Ayo Dosunmu and Kobe White, or would you rather have Austin Reaves?
Austin Reaves, no question.
Austin Reaves, same.
Agreed. All right. To be fair with Austin Reaves, when it was AR and Luka with no Braun to start the year, he did look like more of a two. Would you consider adding Braun makes it complicated?
No, Austin got hurt, guys. Like, Austin was still dropping 25, 30 points a game for the first several games after LeBron came back. Austin's inconsistencies offensively stemmed from him being injured or coming back from being injured and looking very out of rhythm, which forced LeBron to then take larger offensive roles. Every single time Austin was cooking, LeBron gave him the basketball and took a step back.
Yeah. As far as adding LeBron, making it complicated, that's why JJ had the meeting that they did about, hey, this is going to be the usage that we're going to be looking for. And we even talked about it here that it may not be, for different opponents that may be adjusted a little bit. There may be an opponent where LeBron has the ball in his hands more or Austin does. There was certainly flexibility there. But as far as making it complicated, there was a little bit of a learning curve there. There were some bumps in the road, which is what was to be expected. And ultimately, they ironed those things out. And right after, everybody lost their minds about, oh my God, the numbers show they're worse on the floor when the three of them are together. They finished the season. I was nearly plus 10 per 100 possessions with the three of them on the floor. So is it complicated? Yes, but it's also a good problem to have. Like, hey, shoot, we've got three really good players at playing basketball that we have to put on the floor together. You sort that out and you're in good shape. And that's exactly what the Lakers did this year. Let's go here. Does Luka want LeBron back?
Yes. Luka wants good basketball players because his team's not very good.
Yeah. I mean, I don't have any real insight into that, and he was not asked about that at exit interviews, but I would say yeah
he seemed to enjoy playing with LeBron. All right, we've got a few more super chats to get to, but guys, we are right about at time. If you haven't done so yet, make sure you do hit the subscribe button, turn on those notifications as well. We appreciate y'all being here, guys. This was great show, and can't wait to get back and hand out some more grades next week.
Yeah, we're going to be going through the role players next week. We'll split them up. Maybe we can do, like, you know, Marcus, Rui, DeAndre off the top, and then hit the other ones quick on the next day. But we're going to do role player grades next week. Should be fun.
Yes, indeed. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate all of you. Till next time. See ya, and stay safe.